Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable. Welcome back as we continue our recap discussion for the 6th annual NICE project.
Joe and Amy both had to, you know, deal with isolation in different ways during Beth's illness and after her death. And we talked about that already, so I don't know, I feel like...
I think the only thing I would add to it is Lori as an isolated character. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is, you know, spent his childhood in another country. Mm-hmm. And, he is an only child. He is an orphan. Here's mm-hmm. another orphan.
Yeah, he is an orphan. He comes to live with his grandfather because I think his parents have died.
Right. And so just that idea of he also is isolated, seeking that family that we see again and again in Little Women, mm-hmm. the idea of that coming together as a family, and he is seeking that so, so badly.
Yeah, and he even admits to them that he watched through the windows, you know, from his windows he would watch. And he was a sickly boy. He was a sickly child at first. There was, you know, there was this hint of, I don't know if it was even a hint, it was pretty explicit, that he'd had some health problems. And he'd be up in his room, you know, watching through the windows into their living room, seeing their warm family scenes and all that. And you know, in spite of the wealth of his grandfather and his place of higher class and prestige, if you will, higher status and comfort and safety and everything, he was envious of what they had, you know. So his his isolation as a young I don't want to say young man, because when the story starts he's still a kid, you know, he's a young kid in this, you know, grandfather's mansion, you know, he's very isolated. He has few friends until he goes to school, and then he develops some friends. But yeah, I think Lori is a good example of COVID-19 similar isolated young person. I mean, I think about kids, you know, I'm 57, so my kids are too old to be in school. But I think about a lot of the people I know who have children from grade school to high school to college, you know, and these kids in COVID-19 time are dealing with isolation in ways that, you know, my lifetime, other than being ill myself, I wasn't like socially forced to be isolated. I had to isolate when I was ill as a kid growing up, but it wasn't like forced upon me by society, if you will, and or some outside external, you know, threat. Kids today with COVID-19, whether it's, you know, going to school virtually and half in person, or weird half on, half off schedules, different things, not being able to hang out with your friends the way, you know, normally teenagers especially just don't even give that a thought, you know, and now it's like a terribly dangerous thing to do. So you can't help but kind of think of the March girls and Lori in terms of, you know, some of that isolating and bizarreness, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. And I think children in Little Women and Jane Eyre are much more pronounced than, say, the children in Gone with the Wind. In the book, we get a lot more about the kids, the children that are in Gone with the Wind, especially Bonnie, because she's, you know, she's the one that's the most... Yeah. The most fleshed out. But in Jane Eyre, you know, the idea of children or a child alone, orphaned, in isolation, locked in the Red Room. I mean, oh goodness, Jane Eyre's right. Got some serious isolation stuff going on in there.
What's interesting to me is that childhood is important to both Alcott and Bronte. They're significant parts of their two books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're not written very far apart. Mm-hmm. However, mm-hmm. the children in Jane Eyre essentially act like small, less restrained adults.
Mm-hmm.
The children in Little Women act like actual kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. And it makes me wonder, you know, maybe Alcott was around children more than the Brontes were around other children. But
well, because the Brontes themselves were isolated.
Yeah, and when they were, you know, older girls, young women, they did teach, you know, but it's not quite the same, you know. So, yeah, I think we had talked before, I think, about Jane in the Red Room, mm-hmm. and comparing that to the more adult Jane in her room after the failed wedding, and comparing those two isolation situations. And then I think fabulously the part, you know, the descriptives of her roaming the moors, hungry and homeless, before she meets the Rivers family. Jane's moments of isolation may not be Civil War, you know, horror, trauma, you know, like Scarlett goes through, but her moments of isolation and personal trauma are certainly also poetically and beautifully written by Bronte, and very evocative of that kind of those dark moments, and literally dark in the Red Room. You know, she's in the dark in her room after the failed marriage. She's roaming the moors in the dark, you know. I mean, literally in the dark, isolated, feeling a little mad. She's hungry on the moor, you know, and probably in the Red Room she was starving too. I mean, let's face it, they weren't feeding this child. You know, she was being punished. You know, she's almost hallucinating, right? I mean, this element of madness comes through, you know, in these isolating moments for her as well. So I feel like there's a lot of depth and layers to the story in terms of Jane's isolation in these scenarios that I didn't really appreciate as much in earlier readings of this book until COVID-19 2020 readings of this book. So what are your thoughts about that? Because I don't know, I sometimes feel like my isolation has made my perspective very kind of narrow and strange.
Well, the scene that stands out to me is, again, right after the climactic, they're trying to get married, Rochester and Jane, and oh, whoops, he does have a wife in the attic, and then they confront each other, and she's like, hey, I'm Leo, and he's like, no, you're not. No, mm-hmm. come back, honey. In kind of that push and pull mm-hmm. in some of the scenes leading up to that, like when he's pretending to be the gypsy, as problematic as that is, mm-hmm. and kind of feeling her out. You know, he says about her that, hey, I can tell about you that you're going to live alone if you feel that that's what, you know, prudence really demands of you. That you can, you have mm-hmm. that inner strength or whatever, that you can live alone.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't do that.
Right, right.
And I think that that's another thing that's tied to Jane wants a family. She wants to be connected. She wants people around her, whether it's, you know, like other servants or friends or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, influential teachers or whatever. But she also is, I will choose isolation if that's what I feel it will take to preserve
mm-hmm.
my own integrity.
Right, right, right. And that, again, in our four books, Jane is a unique character in that. Although there are moments in the other books where a character takes a stand internally and lives with it and the consequences after it and everything, Jane is vocal about it. Jane is verbal about it, and she's able to say the words, not just feel the feelings. And I think that's an interesting difference in some of our other characters in the book, in the books, all four of them. In Jane Eyre, it's so important that she has a voice, literally a voice, because I think it would have been easier for Charlotte Bronte to write the book in third person almost, and kind of not have that internal dialogue. But we get the internal dialogue and the spoken dialogue that Jane has, and it's the combination of the two that really cement her personality and her strength for me, anyway. I'm not sure if I said that quite the way I wanted to, but I feel like when she speaks, let me put it this way, so much of Gone with the Wind, we have Scarlett's thoughts but they're not said out loud. The stuff she says out loud is sometimes just like an afterthought of what she's been thinking, or, you know, a kind of summation or something. But the actual process of her thinking is told by Margaret Mitchell internally in Scarlett's mind. She's thinking to herself this, this, and this. And then she only says things in certain situations if it's socially acceptable or blah, blah, blah. You know, she doesn't always say what she's thinking. As headstrong as she is, she doesn't always say what she's thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Right? With Jane, we get that process. We get the process internally in her mind, but we also get her saying strongly and firmly to Rochester and other characters like St. John and everybody that she encounters, her aunt, everybody. You know, she actually voices those strong internal thinking thoughts. I didn't say that very well at all.
No, I think you're right, and I think a lot of it is tied to Jane is very self-aware, Scarlett is not, and so a lot of times we're hearing the narrator in Gone with the Wind, their judgment on, okay, Scarlett doesn't have the self-awareness to tell you this, but let me tell you how her mind works.
Exactly, or we have Scarlett saying, I don't understand why they're acting this way. I mean, she's so unself-aware that she really doesn't understand a lot of what's going on around her or why people see her the way they do. And she literally says that in her thinking, you know, I don't understand. Why are they saying that? That's crazy, you know, and they're probably looking at her like she's crazy, you know. So I think you're right. I think it's storytelling and literary technique becomes very important in all four of these books. And we did talk a lot about structure at the beginning of our project because I think we felt that structure, no pun intended, lays the groundwork for uncovering all these different layers and nuances in character and themes and issues and everything. But the structure that each of these individual authors used is so important that that's what we discussed first. I mean, that was our first, you know, we're talking about structure, you know.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I just love all our books.
Join us next time as we continue our recap discussion for the 6th annual NICE project. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.